Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special episode in honor of Filipino-American History Month. Atilano David was one of the more than a quarter million Filipinos who served in American armed forces during World War II. He was there when war came to his homeland and would end up escaping the infamous Bataan Death March.
We were grossly underprepared. Our rifles were too large for the Filipino. To sight the barrel, we had to put the heavy stock on our shoulders, and every time we fired, it bruised our shoulders. And most of the time, because the equipment came from World War One, some of them probably were not properly cleaned, or they were just obsolete. They exploded in our faces, and we had casualties. So the first engagement against the Japanese was a fiasco, because we had exploding bombs, rifles, but our machine gun and mortar shells did not explode. They were duds. So against a veteran army, and really from Nanjing and from Manchuria, and most of our men were farmers and clerks, and some of us didn't even know how to handle a rifle. So we had to retreat from the beach defense to Agno River on North Luzon, while we didn't have any more air cover. We lost 350 scouts on the first engagement in Agno River out of 800, because they, on horseback, they fought against tanks.
And these are the stories so many people are unaware of, and I'm so thankful we have you to clue us in a little bit. Were there rumblings of the surrender before it happened, before General King said, yep, this is it?
No, it was a total surprise. Well, most of us cried because we didn't want to surrender. And then when the order came to surrender, a lot of us were still fighting. In spite of the order to surrender, they were bombing us anyway. We were on the last defense on Mount Samat. We lost practically all of our 33rd Infantry was wiped out on Samat. And when I came to me to surrender, I had a choice of going into the mountains, because there was a rumor that we could go instead of surrendering. But we couldn't, because if we surrendered, anybody who surrendered was shot anyway. They had orders to kill all prisoners. As a matter of fact, there's a record in the books which says the first surrenderers were about 300 mixed U.S. Army and the Philippine Army. They were massacred, 300 of them, and they had surrendered.
I can't imagine what that feels like, to be in a situation where you have to make that decision. And you had family to worry about too, right?
Yes, I had a girlfriend who was waiting, and I didn't know where she was. She didn't know where I was. My father didn't even know I was in the Army, because I didn't tell him.
What do you think led you to decide what you decided, and how scary and frightening was that?
We decided to surrender because if we went to the mountains, we were blocked anyway, and we could be captured anyway. But when we surrendered, a lot of us went away to the hills, including Colonel Torpy, who became the guerrilla leader in Zambales Mountains. When I escaped from the death march, that's what I joined. When we first surrendered, we were lined up. Anybody found with Japanese money, paper money, or anything, or a sword, or as a souvenir, or anything that has a Japanese marking, the owner, the soldier who had it, was usually beheaded or beaten up. On my own, they tried to take my watch and my military ring, and I objected. And when I objected, the soldier hit me with the butt of his rifle in the belly and on my shins. So I fell down on my knees, and I was so angry I was going to retaliate when I got up. But a buddy of mine held me back. He said, don't hold you. it's going to kill you because they've done that. And when we got it together in groups of 100, sometimes groups of 50, to start us on the march. On the march, even before I got too far from the site of surrender, I saw already bodies on the road, bayoneted, and these are not soldiers who were fighting, but they were sick, too sick to go on with malaria, dysentery. That's when I began to lose hope. I said, oh, I'm going to die. In the next town, if I have a chance, I'll die trying to escape or escape. And I did that.
So how far into the march was that? How many days?
One day. So when I escaped, at first what my buddies were trying to do was, because I could not stand up anymore, and they could not carry me anymore. I had malaria and dysentery and a shrapnel wound, and I was fainting. So he said, the next chance we have, you better go. When we saw the Japanese away from the guarding us, I tried to escape through the bushes, but they suddenly jerked me back, and they said, I'll wait for another chance. At this point, I decided to die marching because I was scared for some reason or other. No, I got scared. When they saw a gap a few miles afterwards, they saw a gap. They pushed me through the bushes, and I fell across the bushes into a trench dug out by the Filipino occupants of the house by the road. And they covered me with banana leaves and bamboo leaves.
So you get pushed by your friends, who've already saved your life a couple times, it sounds like, by holding you back from retaliating and then telling you not to escape then. They push you into the bushes, you fall into this trench, and you're so weak you don't even know what to do, but these occupants of the house come down and cover you?
I was out for a while because I was sick and thirsty and starving. When I woke up, I was already in the house, and they nursed me for 3 days. Well, on the fourth day, I told them that I had to go, and they pointed me, they gave me a map where to join the rest of the group. Apparently, they had help other people. Many soldiers escaped through the same, so they knew where to go. I would have died on the way, because on the way there were cattle cars where we were going to be confined. It was a cow car where only 100 could be, and they were jam-packed. They could not even sit down. I probably would have died of starvation and thirst on the way, or malaria or dysentery, because it was from where I escaped, it was another 30 miles. And if I escaped the death march and got into the cattle car, car which was going to the concentration camp, I would have died there also, because 100 people died in one car, just from all sicknesses and from lack of air. When I joined the underground, our first order was to raid garrisons, and also and the next order is at midnight stop trucks with supplies, food and ammunition to Japanese garrisons. After a few raids, we discovered that every time there were casualties in the raids on garrisons, 10 people in the barrios, in the villages, were chosen and executed, man, woman, or child, as long as they could get 10, in retaliation. So we stopped that. So we only started waiting for midnight for trucks to take their supplies and take prisoners. That lasted with me for about 2 months. When I got down with a severe case of malaria, and they smuggled me to Manila, where there was a underground spy ring under the guise of Food Administration. As Food Administration and the Japanese occupation, the government collaborated in inspecting, like the FDA here, food supplies and the markets, inspecting meat and everything. As such, we were able to, because we supplied the Japanese garrisons, we were able to get an idea how many tanks have arrived, how many airplanes have arrived, and we sent this information to somebody called High Pockets, who was the head of the spy ring in Manila. But cut a long story short, we were discovered, and I escaped again, barely, because I was going to report 9 o'clock to the, it was us in the Metropolitan Theater building, our cell was there, led by Colonel Sam Moran. And as I entered the compound to get my pay, as I entered the door, my wife's brother's brother-in-law was also an officer. He stopped me and said, "I'll get the hell out of here. The Japanese company have just captured the management." So they captured 10 people, and I hightailed it out of there and went back to my family, and because the family was with me now, because I was in Manila. And then in the underground newsletter, the next few weeks, I learned that our 10 top men in our cell were beheaded. They were told to dig their graves in the Chinese cemetery, which is not too far from my wife's house, and they beheaded them. And I only remember one name, Colonel Moran, and another name, Boha.
So that would have been your fate too?
Yeah. If I was not delayed, because I was delayed talking to my friend, because we were talking about black market. Because we needed food supplies. We were looking for black market supplies to sell. And I was delayed a few minutes. If I was there in the meeting, I would have been there, me and the other guy.
Yet another close call. And you mentioned your wife. At this time, she's your sweetheart. You hadn't married yet, but then you said it was a while before you saw her again. What was that like when you got to see her? Because I'm sure she had no idea what had happened to you.
She was looking out her window, and she saw me coming, and she had a hunch that it was me. But the maid who opened the garage door, that's where we entered the house, didn't want to admit me because she didn't recognize me. I had long hair and a beard, and I was skin and bones, like somebody on a hanger. I was probably 100 pounds, 109 pounds, out of 153 pounds. So they didn't want to get me in until my wife came down. And, of course, you know, how it was. She didn't want to believe it was me because I didn't look like me. But right then and there, we began to plan on eloping, because his father wanted to shoot me.
It's time for our final break, but we'll hear about more close calls endured during World War II by one of the more than 260,000 Filipinos who served in U.S. Armed Forces during the war. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.